It's hour two of today's 9 till noon show with myself, Donal Kavanagh. You can contact us, as we say, 086 60 25000 for text or WhatsApp messages. You can call us on 074 91 25000, 00353 74 91 25000 if you're outside of the dialing area, at Highland Radio on X, Highland Hub on Facebook, comments at highlandradio.com if email is your chosen form of communication. A few of your comments, and earlier in the first hour of the show we were discussing bars in Donegal and the service they provide and the quality of food in Donegal. Cindy says, there's outstanding cafe and restaurant food in Ardra, as well as a good chipper van, great seafood in Killybegs, wonderful lamb shanks in Gwydor, excellent chowders all over the place, nice sandwiches and omelettes in Donegal town, fresh salads and bakery goods in Portneau. Not sure where he went in the county, but he's missed lots of great spots, and I've had plenty of horrid food in Dublin, so says a caller. In Dublin, you can expect to pay 15 to 20 for... Yes, we did that comment actually already. We were speaking to Councillor Terry Crossan about that dangerous driving incident in Muff last night that you heard again on the news with Michaela there. Caller says, Donal, I've seen a silver old Honda-type car doing handbrake turns at Inch Road, often accompanied by a similar black car. I've seen cars doing this at Bridge End at the petrol station, completely blocking the roads in both directions, often in and out of Inch. Can't understand how the guards haven't caught them. Another caller says, there are cars doing donuts at either end of the Muff Road in Burnfoot on a regular basis. Caller says, I loved eating out, but since I've been diagnosed as a celiac, it's slightly more difficult. Not every premises caters for you. All I can say to that is, in my experience, most premises will now give you a breakdown of what's in their food. And I think I would say, first and foremost, if you're thinking of going out, make contact with the restaurant. But in my experience, most places are actually at this stage catering for gluten-free and keeping an eye on things for people there. Caller says, morning, Donald. There won't be any complaints about Billy's food or staff. Absolutely great spot. And it's always good to hear the views of people. Yesterday on the programme, we had a lengthy discussion with Jane from the Irish Examiner about whether people over 40 should be going to nightclubs. Jane was making the call, the point that she's 20, she and her friends go to clubs, and in many cases she believes they're hampered by men in suits doing congas and rock the boats in the middle of the floor, and she believes that once people are over 40, they should perhaps be going elsewhere. And Keith Fletcher of Highland Radio here was in arguing the opposite. But a caller says, I went dancing when dancing was dancing. Now it's all just shuffling your feet. Clubs are for 16 to 20 year olds now. It's sad that my grandkids will never experience the fun of the dances we had when it was all good, clean fun. We discussed yesterday as well the noise in Buncrana, this banging that appears to be some form of crow banger or something like that. Caller says, I've been hearing this for a few weeks at night, especially one day on my daily walk to the beach I heard it. Today I was taking in the intervals and it seemed to be every 8 to 10 minutes. I think it's natural and coming from the sea. I can't think off the top of my head what might be causing a noise like that from the sea naturally, as it were. Now, I do know that there was a suggestion came in yesterday that this may be some form of deterrent against deer, and it's coming from the direction of Knockalla. One of our callers was suggesting that yesterday, which would make a lot of sense in terms of the fact that it would be coming across the bay, as it were, across Lough Swilly, and it would be quite easily heard if that were the case. There's been a lot of discussion too on the programme recently about the minimum wage, and a caller says 95% of working people, if the truth were told, are not getting anywhere near the minimum wage. I'm not sure about that. 95%, I would say 95%, well, unless the caller is suggesting 95% of people are earning more than the minimum wage, which will be the case with, I'm not sure the figure is 95%, but there will be certainly many people who will be earning more. Another man badly bitten by a dog on the Muff walkway. I think all dogs need to be muzzled, as if owners aren't able to keep them under control. Another caller saying all dogs should be kept on a lead when in public. No exception. The dog licence is far too cheap and not policed. We spoke earlier this week on the show about restaurants and the VAT increase. Caller says, I've no sympathy for restaurant owners. I certainly saw no reduction in prices when VAT went from 14 to 9%. Now it's returning to 14%. I'm facing an increase. How is this fair? The RTE, and we're never too far away from a discussion on RTE and the spending of money there. Of course, there's a lot of money has been misspent in RTE. Can anyone explain why the Gardaí are not investigating the mismanagement of this money? Why is there no accountability within RTE? They seem to be just carrying on with business as usual, getting more funding to buy flip-flops, and while that may be okay if it's your own money, this is public money, and surely we should have a say in how it's spent. I'm not sure. I believe in some instances the figures have been sent for investigation either by Gardaí or another body, but I do believe investigations have been taking place. I'm not quite sure if the Gardaí have completely stood back. Now, there is also an issue of is money being spent illegally and is money being spent inappropriately, and what's legal is not always appropriate. And what's, you know, what's inappropriate is not always illegal, if that makes sense. So there's a big difference in suggesting that money is being spent contrary to the spirit it should be spent in versus money is being spent in a way that's illegal. It's an interesting situation, and I'm sure it is being looked at by a lot of people with far more well-honed legal brains than mine. Caller says, when I hear you talking about restaurants, I notice more and more restaurants are adding in a 10% tip on the bill and expecting you to press yes. I pressed it a few times before I realised they'd added it. I pay for a service. Why are we expected to tip for a job people are paying for? Now, the whole tipping debate is an interesting one, and indeed it was raised slightly in the context of our discussion by Johnny McGuinness in Cool Daff of McGuinness's Bar there in the discussion this morning, and I'd love to come back actually and have a lengthy discussion on tips. Another caller says, restaurant and cafes includes any business that clients pay a tip. The employer has to account for this tip to the employees and their wages and deduct tax off this tip. So if you tip a server €10 after tax, they might be lucky to get 5. And this is an awful workload to the employer's wage check, so says the caller. Now, I'm going to be blunt. If I am tipping a server, I will tip the server in cash on the table. I will not include a tip electronically on the bill. That's my own personal way of doing that. Caller says, I'm not a business owner, but I feel the government let the hospitality trade down by putting VAT back up to 13.5. They just recovered from COVID restrictions and didn't need this. Another caller saying, what about pubs that are now operating as restaurants? That killed the restaurant industry. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio, and you're very welcome back to the programme. Joined by two very special guests in studio, we have Brother Philip Baxter, who is the guardian at Ards Friary. Brother Philip, good morning.
Good morning to everybody.
And we have Brother Ed Green, who is the garden and farm manager at Ards Friary. Brother Ed, good morning.
Good morning to you.
It's great to have both of you with us this morning. The reason you're here is that Ards Friary has been, as is the case in many places, looking at its farming practices, looking at its environmental practices. There is a push towards going more organic, being more natural, being more in tune with nature. And Brother Ed, I'll start with yourself as the garden and farm manager. That's something that you're prioritising in Ards as well.
It is, yeah, absolutely. I think it sort of is incorporated in the wider kind of renewal of our lives in Ards. Over this last kind of 3 to 5 years, we've sort of recommitted ourselves, in a sense, to being in Ards, and we've gone through a process of trying to understand how best to be there in a way which is, as you said, environmentally, ecologically kind of sensitive and aware. So part of the project, the new spring, as we've called it, is to look at how we are managing our land and how we can best share our land with others. So as part of that, we've this year welcomed our first herd of Dexter cattle. We have 13 Dexter cattle. This is the first time that Ards Friary has had its own cattle on the land for quite some time. And we've also broken ground in our wall garden. So we have a 5-acre wall garden where we're looking to kind of start a food garden, I suppose, rather than a market garden. And a big kind of part of that idea is that we will be sharing at least some of our produce. A lot of the produce will come into the house. It will be there to feed the retreatants and the people that are coming to stay with us. But also, our big hope is that we'll be able to start sharing kind of organic food, real kind of nutritious food with the local poor through maybe kind of food banks and things like that. So we're looking at not only how we manage our land, but how we share what we have and how we can kind of give to the local community in that.
And Brother Philip, obviously your dedication is to St. Francis, and it's from Francis that the Capuchins take their inspiration. And people sometimes talk about organic farming and this new push to the environment as though it was a recent invention. The reality is Francis, it could be argued, typified environmentalism and organic practices back in his day.
Absolutely. I think that one of the ways that the kind of community that I circulate in would look at it is that Francis was one of the first person to be able to recognise that the humans who occupied the planet not only live among themselves, but they live in the larger world where there is the more than human world to be taken into account. And of course, he was famous for his capacity to be empathically present to all kinds of animals, and there are many, many fantastic stories, but the purpose of those stories is to emphasize the continuity of life that exists between human beings and the environments in which they live.
Yeah.
So the more than human environment, that's something that Aid constantly talks about, but that would be something that would be dear to the heart of Francis and those then who would attempt to follow in his footsteps.
And you would see yourselves as carrying on that tradition and making that tradition real in today's world.
Oh, very definitely. And with specific reference to art, art is an environment that's there for a long, long time, going back to the landlord days, of course, but then the fires are there since 1932. And the practices that were put in place then are just not suitable for the present time. So we need to thoroughly revise the nature of the house, the way the house is constructed, the way the environment is respected in what we do in the house, and all those kind of issues around heating and windows and those kind of things. The other thing is that people were content to come to a place like us and to be satisfied with the standards they had at home. Nowadays, that is not the case. There's a pressure on us to have a more sophisticated house, and people are looking for added facilities in the house. So we're trying to respond to that in a way that is environmentally safe, sound and secure.
And Brother Aid, from your own point of view, as garden and farm manager, you're responsible for planning it, you're responsible for putting it together, you get to have all that lovely element of planning, but you're also, as a manager, responsible for paying for it. And that's where a lot of this conversation is going to drive toward, because the payment for what needs to be done in Ards can only be done with the support and the ongoing support of the local community and those who use Ards and its facilities.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think one of the things that, again, St. Francis would have emphasised is that we are, you know, we're a team, we're a household, and that the whole human family is such. So what we've realised more and more over this last couple of years, because of the kind of situation of the religious orders, I suppose, in around kind of specifically in Europe, is that we won't be able to achieve what we want to achieve in Ards without the people that are with us.
Yeah.
And actually, we're really, really blessed with the staff that we have in Ards. They're so committed and so dedicated and so skilled and experienced. But also, we need to be reaching out beyond the borders of who's already present, I suppose, in Ards. And looking for help and support in terms of kind of people that might be willing to volunteer their time, specifically around kind of farm and garden, you know, manpower or person power, maybe I should say, is really important. And it's something that we are lacking, I suppose, in a sense. So having people that are willing just to give up some of their time during the week to come and help do those kind of things. But actually, I think financially, you know, that's another... In ecological term is a limiting factor to growth, you know. So our financially, that our financial status, our financial situation is a limiting factor in some ways. So asking people for help financially as well. And again, St. Francis would never have shied away from from saying, I need help to do this amazing, beautiful kind of thing that we're trying to achieve. And sort of appealing to the generosity of those that also love Ards, because I think the love for Ards is wide.
Yeah. It's an icon in this county. There is no doubt about that. Yeah. Brother Philip, I mean, you know, the reality is you live a spiritual life, but you live it in the real world. And with that in mind, there is a church gate collection coming up this coming weekend as part of this drive to try and, you know, get the money to fund what needs to be done in the farm and garden. But also, as you said, what needs to be done in the house in terms of heating, in terms of facilities, in terms of ensuring that those who come to stay in the house are given the best facilities and best conditions they can be.
That's absolutely correct. One of the things that I have learned since I came to Ards is the way that people react to the simple experience of coming there. There's one single word that is undoubtedly on the lips of most people who are, give us feedback, and it is that when I come here, I have an extraordinary experience of peace. It does something to my body, it does something to my mind, it does something to my spirit, and we want to create the best possible opportunities for doing that. Likewise, with the programs that we're doing in the house, we have tried to consolidate what is there and build on what the generations before us have done. There's solid spirituality arising out of that tradition. But again, in a world in which we are multicultural and many faith traditions around us, we are also in the process of making other faiths welcome at Ards to share with us the dialogue that is necessary to do at that level, but also to simply allow the traditions to absorb what the people of Donegal have always enjoyed, the peace of a place where forest, sea and land come together and make an impression on people's lives that is truly liberating and adds to the questions of the solutions of mental health, those kind of issues also. And the new programs that we're putting in place will address those issues, both of mental health. For instance, we have bereavement programs going on. The kids are coming in from the schools. We're doing stuff around that builds on the environmental studies and so on that they're doing. So we're collaborating with teachers in order to provide an opportunity of celebrating the spiritual side of things when they come to a place like Ards.
And Ards is very much of the community, and the local community is very much of Ards, whether you're heading down in the Creasley direction, heading in the Dunfanaghy-Falcarra direction, wherever you're going in that sort of area, Ards is at the centre of a community, and, you know, everyone in that area knows Ards, everyone in the area interacts with Ards, and Ards makes a point of interacting with the community. And Brother Aid, as you said earlier, one of the things you're looking at is trying to share with the poor of the wider area of the produce that you're making. So, I mean, that those community links are going to be strengthened in the coming months and years.
Absolutely. And I was giving a talk there in Ards recently on biodiversity, you know, and one of the kind of things that maybe gets missed when we have the biodiversity conversation is that we are biodiversity. Community building is as much a part of recovering biodiversity as any of the other actions that we might be able to take in agricultural or kind of horticultural or in the woods or in. So we're at the very, I think much at the heart of what we're doing is the recognition that we are one family, we are one household, and we want to build a community. And the gate collection that you mentioned is the first in our a kind of a plan, for want of a better word, for fundraising to find the support to enable us to be able to use the space, the skills, and the spirituality that we have, and to continue to share that in a way which benefits everybody. In the locality, Donegal particularly, but I think worldwide actually.
Yeah.
We have, you know, people that come from America, and we have, you know, so yeah, that's the appeal, I suppose, is, you know, we're looking for help to continue that tradition of being at the heart of the community, if that's...
Yeah, and of course, with that in mind, there is an online presence. There's the artsfriary.ie website, which people will use, and that can be used to, presumably, for donations?
Absolutely, yes. That's true. Donald, can I add just one other thing that has happened? The Irish Friars are growing older, and there has been, and so I suppose to a degree continues to be a certain threat and all of that. But the Capuchins in Ireland have committed to Ards very, very specifically at our triennial meeting 2 years ago now. And we've committed, and the very good news is that we have been able to attract friars from other places. Obviously, Aidan is not traditionally reared in Ireland, but he's a younger person who has come across the water to us. We have another young friar who's just 30, and he's the face of the shop in Ards now. And we have a third one coming. So we're building up a younger generation of friars. And I hope that that gives people confidence in recognizing that we're doing our very best to make sure that what we are beginning in terms of physical and natural reconstruction is met by the energy that is necessary to carry it through. Not just by the older friars, but by the younger generation that's behind us as well.
And Aid, as part of that younger generation, you're confident for the future of Ards. I mean, you know, you believe Ards does have and will continue to have a long-term future in Donegal and a long-term place in that wider Donegal community.
Oh, absolutely. And just on a personal note, I hope to be able to spend the rest of my life there. It probably won't happen because that's not the nature of our life. But I do, I'm incredibly confident. I think that what we have is a very kind of profound message, a very profound mission that actually we've taken a long time to discern. And I think that gives me a huge level of confidence that we will, I mean, you can never be sure that you'll achieve the plan that you set out because you have to be able to be open to change and different circumstances happening. But what we want to be able to do is, we're confident that we will be in Ards for as long as we possibly can into the future, and that what we're trying to do is something that's very beneficial for everybody, land, people.
Land, people, community.
Yeah.
The initiative is A New Spring for Ards. There's lots more on ardsfriary.ie, and there is a church gate collection this coming weekend, Saturday and Sunday, August 24th and 25th. As always, people are always welcome in Ards to walk the forest, to walk the beach, to visit the house, visit the community. A lot of people I know go to Mass there at weekends as well, and that welcome will always be there. But for the moment, Brother Philip Baxter, guardian at Ards, and Brother Aid Green, who is the, shall we say, horticultural and agricultural manager at Ards Friary. Thank you both very much indeed for joining us on the programme today.
Thank you, Donal. Thanks very much.
Just want to remind you of Irish Music Month. We are looking for our new local hero. Finalists can be groups, solo artists, or any creative making great original music that needs to be heard, supported and nurtured. We do need an original song to enter. We need you to send your original song to localhero@highlandradio.com along with a short written piece about you and your contact details, and that needs to be with us here on Highland Radio before tomorrow. So Highland Radio will then draw a shortlist of four artists, bands, musicians, whatever, to perform live on the 9 till noon show with Greg. Each of the four finalists will receive €875, and Highland will then decide a local winner that will go forward for national consideration, and a lot of this done in conjunction with Hot Press magazine. For more information, log on to highlandradio.com or check out our socials. But we do need a recording of a song, which needs to be an original. It can be, as we say, a band, a solo artist, a collective of musicians, whatever form that collective may take. The only constraint being the song must be original. And we've had some great winners on Highland Radio here in the past that went forward to the national competition, and we hope to continue that. Just want to mention as well that Greg will be doing a special show on Sunday, the 8th of September, live from the London Irish Charity Vintage Club in Greenford. It's a show he's done before. I think this is the third or fourth year now Greg's done it. It's from 12 noon. It's from 12 noon until 2, so it's the noon till 2 show, and it's going out on, as we say, Sunday, the 8th of September. And many Donegal people attend that particular event. And if you have friends in London, you can let them know about it. And you may well hear them cropping up on the programme with Greg in the course of that particular broadcast. Now, you'd have heard on the news this morning that schools will find out more details in the coming weeks about plans for a phone ban in secondary schools. The Education Minister, Norma Foley, is looking at the idea for the entire school day, including lunch breaks. And she's now writing to schools to give advice on how that might work. Now, I'm joined on the line by Deputy Joe McHugh, who knows a little bit about these matters because he is, of course, a former Minister for Education. Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Donald.
Joe, this is an issue, obviously, that's been under discussion for quite some time. A number of schools will have policies limiting mobile phones in place already, but it can go further, and Minister Foley's initiative is one that you support.
Yeah, look, I welcome it, but I think most schools and most principals listening to this news this morning will will point to their own efforts in terms of introducing their own policy around this. Like most schools, even my own children who go to secondary school, they talk about the fact that their phone goes into the locker in the morning and they don't get it till the evening. So a lot of schools have already done this. But look, anything to raise the awareness is good, and any new policy measures is good in relation to the phone. But I think what needs to go hand in glove with any decision around the phone is to look at the overall usage of phone, and not just young people but also adults. And I think we as adults have to check our own mobile phone habit as well, because look, young people will pick up the habits of older people as well, be it their parents or older teenagers in the house as well. So I think this conversation is important, but it's about trying to develop a deeper understanding about the harms of phone usage, but also the science behind, you know, even take for example sleep. If there's too much Blu-ray focus just before you go to bed at night, you're not going to get a good night's sleep. So I think we really have to look at, you know, the science of things such as sleep, and the importance of sleep, and the importance of sleep to not just old people but also to young people as well, and they will require more. So I'm just thinking on the statistics. I know Loretta Mulford organised a webinar for parents last year, and the people on presenting, it was a youth group, was presenting, and they did a bit of survey work. And they were saying that 83% of young teenagers bring their phone to bed. So look, I know people argue that it might be needed for alarm clock purposes, yeah, and all that. But how do we know when those phones are been switched off? So I think a broader conversation around overall phone use is needed here as well.
There will need to be some exceptions. I mean, we've got a comment in, and funny, I have a niece who's in exactly this situation. Caller says, in relation to mobile phones in schools, I'm a teacher, I have diabetes. My phone is my continuous glucose monitor. I also have a diabetic child in my class who has a phone for the same purpose. As the classroom is extremely busy, I find the CGM a lifesaver. It alerts me to changes in my sugars, allowing me to make decisions based on what my blood patterns are. I've been teaching 20 years, and although my phone would have made an alert sound at times, none of the children ever passed comment or asked what the noise or alert was. Yes, I agree, at times phones can be a distraction. I think exceptions will have to be made to this rule. Now, as I said, I have a niece who's in exactly that boat. She constantly has to carry a bottle or two of Lucozade with her in her bag, and if the blood goes to a certain level, monitor goes off on the phone, she immediately has to take a slug of her Lucozade. The same monitor goes off on her mum and dad's phones as well. And, you know, that's going to have to be recognised, and that's going to, provision is going to have to be made for that.
Yeah, look, that's a very valid argument. And look, I suppose the way the world has gone now in terms of health and science, there's so many apps there on phones that are invaluable. And, you know, this example of diabetes and diabetes monitoring is so important. So yeah, there will have to be exceptions, and you know, there will be other examples as well. And I know there will be teachers that, you know, will be incorporating some sort of app on their phone, or some sort of a program on the phone that may be needed in some classes. So look, this is the once the word ban is introduced, you know, it can have various connotations, but I think the overall message here, and the overall, I suppose, drive behind this is to look at the focus, and I suppose phones as a communication tool, be it, you know, I see some of my own kids' phones there, and the snaps keep coming in every 5 seconds. So there are distractions. So it's about trying to get the focus and trying to get that focus in the class. But one thing, and I'm, I suppose, as a former youth worker and as a former teacher myself, one thing I'll always have great respect for is the fact that young people will come up with a lot of the formulae themselves. And one thing that I did find in youth work, young people did, you know, still want to have boundaries. They do, you know, need these boundaries in their life as well. And I think that's where there's an overall responsibility to try to make it a bit more manageable for them in the different world that they're living in compared to the world we grew up in, Donal.
I know a lot of your period as health minister was dominated by COVID and the response to COVID, both in terms of education provision and exams, particularly Leaving Cert. But was this an issue that was under national discussion during your time as minister?
I suppose in the time I was in the department, you know, there would have been peripheral conversations the time when we had the stakeholders and around the table and discussing various issues. There would have been peripheral conversations around it, but no, I suppose from the time I went into the Department of Education, my biggest crisis was the issue with school buildings and construction issues around those school buildings. And then obviously when COVID came along in 2020, I was still in the ministerial brief, and it was nearly crisis management, and, you know, it was junior cycles. It was to do with the Leaving Cert and whether the Leaving Cert would go ahead, whether it wouldn't go ahead. So it was dealing with a lot of crisis at the time and during my time. But yeah, look, there would have been peripheral conversations around mobile phone usage, but, you know, once again, one of the most important voices around the table in terms of the stakeholders is actually the young persons themselves. They have there's a young person's voice at these discussions, and I think we have to value the fact that a lot of young people are learning, are getting a lot of information. Yes, of course, there's information that's not that valuable on the World Wide Web, but there is a self-education going on as well, and I see, you know, even from not just my own family circle, but been involved in the last couple of years with underage football as well. You know, young people are conscious of their diets, they're conscious of their fitness levels, and they're getting a lot of their information from the phone. So we have to value the fact that on the one hand, yes, there are distractions and phones can have their faults in terms of too much access and maybe access at the wrong time. But at the same time, a lot of young people are getting self-educated from a lifestyle medicine point of view as well.
Finally, I do have to ask you, with the Leaving Cert results coming out tomorrow, we're told they're still going to be we're still dealing with sort of the aftershock, if that's the phrase, of what happened in 2020, 2021 in terms of the adjusted grades and the work that was done over COVID to try and make sure that the grades were correct. We're still not fully out of that, and it's thought that there may be increased college points now next week demanded as a result of those slightly inflated grades and the impact that the adjustments are going to have. How long do you think it's going to take before we'll be completely out of that phase and everything will be what you might have called in 2019 back to normal?
Well, I think, first of all, I want to wish students well tomorrow, and for the ones who do well, congratulations. And for the ones who feel they didn't realise their potential and felt they should have done better, look, It's not an end game. There's so many pathways now in the system, and if we just look at the work from Solace, DETB, and even the different platforms now that they have with the ATU and all the universities, there's so many different avenues. So tomorrow's not an end game by any means. In relation to your question around the grades and the inflated grades, I think I don't think we can ever go back to exactly where we were, because COVID changed so much and the education system has evolved. And I think the education system still has to come to terms with the changing needs of education as well. I know there's a lot of challenges there. There's still a lot of curriculum pressures on the part of teachers, you know, trying to get the curriculums finished. And then I suppose young people, they'll demand a fit for purpose education as well. So I think we've to really, really look at, you know, what is the best type of education. And when we hear people, you know, grappling for be it plumbers or electricians and you can't find one, you know, the whole idea of going for the points race, and we have to really recalibrate it and look at the value of apprenticeships and all that. So look, that's a wider debate, but to answer your question around when do we get back, I think there has to be a long-term view over this, because there's no way that we can go back to where we were pre-2020 and for 1 year to basically for the whole thing to be recalibrated in one year. That should not happen, because it wouldn't be fair in the first instance for 1 year to come on the base scripts to come on the results and points mechanism there. It'll have to be done on a very, very gradual basis.
Deputy Joe McHugh, thank you very much indeed for sharing your perspectives with us, former Education Minister, of course. And thanks indeed, Joe, and all the best to you and to the family.
Thank you. Thanks for your time.
Joe, take care. Just one or two comments before we go to our next caller. And we were discussing the issues of diffing and donuts and so on. Cutter says this is a regular occurrence in Muff and dangerous driving. It's already, nothing is ever said about it. Another caller is saying school bus arrives at 20 to 8 in the morning to collect children in Kilmacrenan for school in Milford. The class doesn't start until 20 past 9. They're effectively arriving at the school an hour early. Now, going to go to line one and to John, whose wife has to travel to Sligo University Hospital for regular eye injections. John, good morning to you.
Good morning.
John,
go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to put the question to you. You're in a position where you regularly have to travel to Sligo, sometimes to be there before 10 in the morning, as was the case this week, and neither you nor your wife drive, and that's creating problems.
That's one of the problems, and the problem is that there are no buses at that hour of the morning. We both have the bus pass. Now, the appointment for the 11th of September, I've just got it yesterday, is for 9:55 in the morning. That means we would need to leave the house here at 7 o'clock in the morning, maybe 6:30, to make sure we get there in time. Now, my argument is, or my question is, why is there not a clinic in Letterkenny? Whenever we go down there, most of the people that we meet in Sligo are from Donegal.
Was the service previously available in Donegal?
I think there was one time, and they cut it off. Now, they used to also as well, there used to be transport supplied for us going. And then the government, about 4 months ago, 5 months ago, they stopped the transport. Now, that means that we have to go down the night before, book into bed and breakfast, get a taxi out in the morning to the hospital, a taxi back in, and get the bus to Letterkenny and a bus from there to Buncrana. It's a crazy way of working, and the amount of people. One of the days we were down there, there were 14 people in the waiting room, and 12 of them, 14, were from Donegal. Why can there not be one in Letterkenny or even in Elton na Gelvin?
In terms of the injection that your wife has to get, is it a routine injection? Is it a specialist injection? Is it an injection that can only be delivered by someone with a very specific qualification, or could it be delivered by any nurse?
I would say no. It's for vascular. Our eyesight's fading, and this is to stop it getting worse.
Yeah.
And I think it has to be done.
So presumably it's a very specialist person that's got to administer this.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, obviously the most important
thing. And they're very good.
And I think the most important, it does really have to be said in fairness, the important thing is that, you've got to ensure you get this done where the best possible, staff and personnel are there to actually do it in a safe manner. It's certainly one we'll ask the HSC about, John. You're now, as you say, you're in a position where, if you how often does she have to get the injection?
Sometimes every 6 weeks, sometimes every 8 weeks. That'd be, say, 2 months.
Yeah.
Every 2 months.
Every two months, which is going to be six times a year.
Six times a year.
And that's then potentially six times a year you have to book into a B&B in Sligo, which is not going to be in any way cheap. You've got to get taxis. Okay, you've got the public transport from Buncrana to Letterkenny, from Letterkenny to Sligo, but then you're on your own in terms of payments after that.
No, but my appointment now is for 9:55, the next appointment.
Yeah.
There's no transport from Buncrana to Letterkenny for me to pick up a bus at that hour of the morning. So, in other words, the last time I got a taxi, it cost me €170. And we're both senior citizens. My wife is 84 and I'm 83. And, we're on the pension. And there's a lot of other people in worse off positions than us.
Yeah. Have you asked the HSE about this and why there isn't some form of transport provided?
I was on to Padraig McLaughlin, and he brought it up in Dáil Éireann, and he was told that it's cutbacks.
Yeah.
That's the answer. Cutbacks. So where do you go from there?
Well, we'll certainly put the query in to the HSC to see if there's any way that perhaps this could be provided in Letterkenny. John, in the meantime, look, we wish you and your wife all the best, and hopefully the treatment is working and as much of her sight can be saved as is possible.
That's fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed,
okay.
John. That's John there, and John speaking to us from Buncrana. And yeah, I suppose it's that old issue that you need to make sure that when a medical treatment like this is being provided, it's being provided by the best qualified professional that's available. And there's always going to be in health provision this debate about distance versus professionalism. But certainly the point that's being made there by John is a valid one, particularly in terms of the times. I mean, you know, for someone to get from Buncrana to Sligo at 5 to 10 in the morning, using public transport is just not viable. And, you know, if you're going to travel down the day before and then eat in a restaurant and then get taxis and then stay in a B&B and so on and so forth, that's a cost that is going to add up very quickly indeed. We spoke earlier to Brother Philip and Brother Aid from Ards, and Cotter says Ards is such a beautiful place. I visited there often, and as Brother Philip said, I always leave with that beautiful peace that seems to be in the air down there, a wonderful place and people. Cotter says, why not have concerts like Knock in Ards to raise money? There's some very good musicians around. That's from Maggie from Godore. Any plans for a place where people's ashes can be laid to rest in Ards? It's a fabulous spiritual place. That was discussed. I do recall there was a discussion on that in the fairly recent, within the past year or two. There were certainly one or two stories about this on the Tyrconnell Tribune. There was it a reliquary it was going to be called? I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but certainly that was discussed. Caller says, we were talking earlier this week about the presidency and the prospect of perhaps Tommy Tiernan running for the presidency. Well, Cotter says, I have favoured two great candidates for the presidency that nobody has talked about. They would be Simon Harris and Simon Coveney, who have true integrity and are young enough to take the job. They are truly honest. Now, whatever about Simon Coveney, I suspect Simon Harris sees himself as having a career in national politics that's going to last long into the next decade. He's not even 40 yet, and I suspect Simon Harris would be looking to further a career in national politics for quite a lot longer rather than going for the presidency now. But I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth. Simon Coveney would certainly be an interesting candidate for the presidency. I know within Fine Gael circles that the name that's been mentioned most that I've heard is Francis Fitzgerald. And certainly on that Path to Power podcast that the Tommy Tiernan speculation came from, that was the name that was mentioned on there. But we'll see what happens. Finally, Cotter says, please mention there's a lot of Coldplay scam tickets during the rounds. Please be careful if you're looking to buy. I was nearly caught, but because it was my nephew, I thought it was genuine. His page had been hacked or cloned, and he didn't realise it. Beware, beware, beware when you're dealing with anything like this online. It's a very dangerous area out there. And if you see things, and it's the age-old thing, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. If it looks like a scam and smells like a scam, do you know what? I would presume it's a scam.